Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling, along with the Russian Lion, Andy Hamilton, also of Track Wrestling. You excited for what's to come, Andy?
Absolutely, Kyle.
How could you not be? The countdown begins.
Countdown's been underway. Well, you're the one doing the countdown.
Well, I am, but I think for these purposes, I know that I'm going to Cadet Worlds pretty soon. I'm going to Sofia, Bulgaria here in the next few days, depending on when you listen to this. And my first chance to go to the Cadet World Championships. And got to say, I'm jacked, dude. I hope people get behind it and are jacked, too, and watch it on Track Wrestling.
Tell you what, Kyle, I don't know that I've ever seen you more jacked than you are today.
Well, I'm pretty high on life right now. I'm part of it.
You got into the sugar bowl.
Well, no, it was that Jim Miller, who I hope everyone knows who that is, found the green tea smoothie mix. So Jim Miller is no longer at Wartburg, and he got me hooked on these green tea smoothies. And it's the only place I could ever find them was at Wartburg at the W. They made them there. And so I would actually go up. It's about a 20-minute drive from where I live. There were times I would go up specifically just to get a green tea smoothie. So when Jim left, some of the people that worked there were actually crying. They had tears because they liked Jim so much. And they said, as a parting gift, we're going to give you a bag and how to make the green tea smoothie. So they gave Jim a bag. Jim went online. He found it. And so he gave me a bag. And so now I know how to make the green tea smoothies. So I had two of them today. So I think that's part of the reason I'm so jacked.
You're amped.
I'm amped. And part of it's because I had the green tea smoothies. The other part is because I know I can make the green tea smoothies. And the watermelon you had helped. Had some really good bacon. You poached some eggs or
hard-boiled
eggs, which I think is a great system you have. So just a lot of reasons to be excited. There's four world championships that Track Wrestling is going to cover. U23s end it. But upcoming is going to be the Cadet World Championships. And again, these world championships, the age level just keep getting better all the time. And I think winning them is more important all the time. And so if you have one back in the day, I think retroactively it means a lot more. And I think that people are getting behind these age level world championships more than they ever have. I love seeing it.
Did you put any chicken in your green tea smoothie?
Don't even start, dude.
Okay.
It's not even right.
What's the Russian Lion? Right. What's that all about?
Well, you're going to Estonia. Correct?
Yeah.
For the Junior World Championships. And the Russian Lion is George Hackenschmidt. He wrestled Frank Gotch in the early 1900s when professional wrestling was real. Arguably the first professional wrestling world champ. Jacked, man. For that early 1900s era, he was an impressive, impressive wrestler. Greco-Roman style. I hope that when you go to the Junior World Championships, at some point, there is a George Hackenschmidt reference. He got beat twice by Frank Gotch from Humboldt, Iowa. And isn't it crazy that there's two Division I head wrestling coaches from Humboldt, Iowa? Kevin Dresser and Tony Ursuline, both from Humboldt, Iowa. How that happens, I'll never know. But there's a lot of connections there. So I hope that they do some sort of a job at the Junior Worlds in remembering the legacy of George Hackenschmidt, who's from Estonia. So that's how the Russian Lion came about.
Okay.
So a lot of connections there, but maybe I should call you the Frank Gotch because you're closer from where you're from. You're closer to Humboldt, Iowa, where you live, than Estonia. But thought you're going there. Let's go with it.
Okay.
Does that give you a good enough answer?
Hey, it works. There's at least some kind of explanation.
Well, hey, after last week's show with Dayton Fix, I don't think we can overstate or talk enough about this topic. It's been in my head ever since he said it, and I love this mentality. I hope parents pick up on it. Whoever's listening, I hope picks up on it. When Dayton Fix said, I lost by 10 points to a kid, and then the next time I lost by 5, and my dad was excited for me. There's so much to that. And so as we talk with Rich Bender today, the executive director of USA Wrestling, he's going to have a lot of insight about the future of wrestling and where we are and just a state of where we are going into the 2020 Olympics. But as we think about the success, I think so much of it is because of that mentality. And I don't know how many people have read the book Mindset by Carol Dweck, but it's called The Growth Mindset and a Fixed Mindset. And she talks about that. She actually uses Patricia Miranda in the book as an example. She's our first medalist in women's wrestling from the United States. She got a bronze in 2004. So they use her as an example in the book. So one of the reasons to get Mindset by Carol Dweck. But they talk about that. And I've seen it time and time again where guys never put it in terms of winning and losing. They talk about we're making each other better. I was able to grow with someone. Jaden Cox said that after the Olympic trials in 2016. I can't wait to keep growing and learning with Kyle Dake. It's never about burying someone or putting them in the ground. It's this mentality that I truly am only seeing in the last 5 years. And maybe it's because I'm aware of it from that book, but I don't think so. I think this is a new trend. I think guys are willing to put it on the line. I think a guy like Kyle Snyder, when he gets in the practice, I don't think he cares how many times he gets taken down. Tervel Dilagnev said that. He said, I've never seen a world champion that gives up so much position and gets taken down so much as Kyle Snyder, but it's because he's willing to put himself on the line and he's always in a position of growing and learning. And it's never about ego. It's always about advancement. And I think we're in that era right now.
I think David Taylor's wired the same way.
Oh, didn't his dad do that? I think his dad was part of that. Hey, we don't care about wins and losses. Bump up a couple weight classes. Go Greco and freestyle. I think he was absolutely that way. So I think David Taylor Sr. was that guy that built David Taylor Jr. that way, or David Taylor III that way. And I think that's the right mentality. Beating on a kid because he's 5 years old and he doesn't win a tournament. Come on.
Yeah. No, I don't know if it was, David Taylor or if it's just more of a Penn State mindset, but I think I've heard David Taylor. I want to go back and watch the interview I had with him from last July or last August at World Team Training Camp out in Camp Pendleton. But, I want to say that he talked then about going out and making mistakes. Like he wants his young kids to go out and make some mistakes in matches and learn from them. Try stuff and give themselves opportunities to learn from their mistakes, which is something that's a bit of a foreign concept.
And let's go way back to what was your GPA? 2.4?
You give me a little bit too much credit. 2.3.
2.3. Okay.
Somewhere in there. But, not good.
But this all feeds into the same concept. And I think it's the reason.
I made a lot of mistakes in college.
Here's the reason it's relevant here, because I think this is why enrollment's down. I think people, especially this generation of millennials, are asking questions and they're saying, Michaela Beck saying, why do I want to go to college? I'm going to go to the Hawkeye Wrestling Club, use my athletic career now, and if I want to go to college later, I can. Kyle Snyder's going out to the Olympic Training Center. You're seeing what Kevin Jackson, we've had interviews. Aaron Brooks goes out to the Olympic Training Center before going to Penn State. There's just a mentality of, why do I need to wait? Why do I need to follow the course and the path that everyone else has followed? And look where you are. You're 2-3. What does that matter at this point? Nobody cares, but you followed the right path because you have better preparation by doing it your way than some, at this juncture, a meaningless GPA. It's brilliant. And I think that someone had told you that, right? They said,
yeah, my college advisor said your priorities ought to be number one. If you're serious about getting into journalism, go to work for the Daily Iowa. Do as much as you can for the Daily Iowa and the school newspaper, you know, because employers are going to ask for clips. They're not going to ask for transcripts. And then he said, number two, go out and have a good time because you're never going to go back and get to do college all over again. And then number three, do enough to stay in school. And I thought, like, this is cuckoo at first when he said it. I'm like, is he serious? And then in retrospect, it was the best advice that I could have gotten given where I am now.
And here you are with a 2-3, and here you are the greatest wrestling journalist of our era, if not of all time. And it's
come didn't, on, Kyle.
Hey, I mean it. I don't care what you say, but listen, but all I'm saying is you don't have to follow the path, the prescribed path that everyone thinks. What if you would have gotten a 4.0? Would it change anything? If you would have busted tail in school, you would have neglected the other part of it, where you would have gotten in jobs at the Daily Iowan.
I would have probably wound up with some scholarship money. And okay. Then who knows where I'd be working today.
Yeah. So,
or if I'd still be in journalism, I'd probably be working somewhere else.
But it's all predicated on one question. It's why. Why do you need to do the same old, same old? Why does college need to be the path? Look at John Broughton. Look at our guy that, congratulations to him on receiving an award from the National Wrestling Media Association, by the way, does the highlight footage for track wrestling.
Yeah, it's awesome.
There's a guy who said, I know more than the teachers do. He was thinking about not even finishing college, and I think he did it as a favor to his mom. But I feel like I never heard from him about what college did for him. I feel like he was innovative and he wanted to grow and learn on his own, and that's why he's in this position. I don't think college had anything to do with it.
Yeah, but the guy's really motivated. He is super talented. As good as it gets from what I've seen of putting together sizzle reels. And funny thing is, we took him to Budapest with us last year, and I asked him about, you know, are your instructors giving you a hard time about missing a couple weeks of classes? And he said, yeah, they've all been pretty good, except I think he said one of them, maybe like a video editing class, he was going to get docked a little bit for missing class. And I'm like thinking, you got to be kidding me. Like, this guy's getting so much like real life experience here and producing stuff. Like, I can't imagine there's anybody at that entire school that does, has a better handle on video editing than John Broughton does.
And exactly.
They're going to give people better grades than him because he was over actually putting his skills to use in Budapest. That's kind of funny.
But when do you, on a resume, or you look at someone's credentials, Kales, Gables, on down the line, whoever, Tom Brands, how many times do we even have a clue of what their GPA is? We have no idea. It doesn't really matter. Scott Beck, our favorite mailbag, he wishes he would have gone to the University of Iowa. He's mad that he went to Harvard. He said, I wasn't good enough for Iowa, and that drives him crazy. There's just a different level. I think we're just in an era where people are asking questions more often and saying that the same old path.
So you're saying education's not important. Is that what you're trying to tell people?
I think it's extremely important.
Okay.
But I think the education can be in a different lane.
All right.
Like Gable, his education.
You're not saying drop out of school.
Not at all. I told Broughton, you got to finish it out, man. There's something about finishing. There's something about getting that diploma. What I'm saying is that you can't just expect that's going to be the end all be all. I think your experience that you had at the Daily Iowan was more important than your college education.
Absolutely. 100%. No doubt.
And the
guys that I worked with now, Wayne Drays, ESPN.com, one of the best sports features writers in the country. Mike Triplett covers the Saints for ESPN.com. Incredible reporter. Chris Snyder's teaching at Drake. He's a professor at Drake, but he's done incredible things in journalism before that. I could go on down the list, and it was an unbelievably talented crew that I got to work with and learn from, guys my own age. And you're right. I mean, it's about real life experience, I think. I mean, who cares what you know book wise if you can't put it to use?
Yeah. And I don't think back a lot other than one professor who altered the way I think and I still use every single day. I don't know that I turn back to college and say, wow, it really prepared me for X. Now, teaching, that's a different animal. I think there's certain lanes that say, absolutely, that's directing you on a path. But I'm a general comm major. Yeah, is it important that I got in front of classes and had the repetition of doing that? Yeah, I think there's an overall appeal to doing something like that, or an overall value, but I don't necessarily point to a specific, but I can point to specifics outside of that where someone might have said something, or through a conversation, or through someone's ability to articulate a message to me in a work environment, that it builds you in a different way, which is why we're starting a new podcast called How Wrestling Built Me. And I think we're going to find that wrestling is a receptacle and an end game that has a long shelf life. And it's going to be fun to check that out. I hope you'll check out that new podcast we have called How Wrestling Built Me. We're going to talk with people who use the values of the sport and really parlay that into another endeavor. So check that out here soon. And we have some results we want to talk about with the Americans' last ranking tournament of the year before we go into the Senior World Championships. I know we have the Pan American Games coming up, which will only have 6 weight classes, but we're getting closer to the Worlds, and it's starting to amp up, and some pretty good results. I tell you what, Jaden Cox is looking pretty good right now. He'd probably be on the top of my list for the world champ that will repeat in 2019.
Yeah, I was kicking that thought around in my head. Is there a bigger favorite for the United States than him? Is there somebody that's a better bet for a world title than Jaden Cox?
I don't think so. He's wrestling better than last year.
Maybe whoever comes out of 79. Right on the same kind of level.
Yeah. Whoever that is, whether it's Dake or Deringer, we have a couple guys that are really looking good right now. Burroughs got the job done again. Of course, everyone's talking about Yanni Zane in the first round, but lots of
Yanni interesting coming back from 9-0.
Yeah. I mean,
the semis.
Does his legend grow or what? And he was so close to even giving up that tech fall. It was a scramble and looked like he could have given up that takedown. But Yanni's the real deal.
And it also just speaks volumes to the unbelievable depth worldwide at 65 kilos.
Oh, man. It's the weight class, isn't it? It's just, and it makes sense, that weight class, if you translate it to pounds. Yeah.
Haji Aliyev, Kanchekishvili. Whoever winds up there from Russia, keep going on down the line. I mean, there's Valdez, Tobir.
Yeah. There's
tons and tons of guys there.
Yeah.
There are going to be a lot of guys that are world medalist caliber wrestlers who don't win world medals this year at 65 kilos.
And that's the sad part about the Olympic Games, is that there's going to be some really good guys that don't even make the Olympics. And I just think it's why the World Championships is harder to win than the Olympic Games, because you just have everyone there. You can send someone from your country, and it gets whittled down to the Olympic Games. Yeah, there's a process in place, and it's hard to get to it. But World Championships, man, you can have well over 32-man brackets in some instances. Get smaller than that in some cases too, with 10 weight classes, but there's times where you got loaded weight classes and you're going to have to win 5 or 6 matches to be a world champ. It's difficult. And Olympic Games are what? I don't know the exact numbers, but close to 16, somewhere in there.
Yep.
I think they have for the Olympics. And as we talked last show, you want to be in that top 6 after the 2019 world, so you can rest easy that your country is qualified. Because I think we still have the streak continues for men's freestyle. I think they've qualified every year. I don't think there's ever been a year that the men's freestyle team has not qualified, if memory serves me. There's been a close couple times with Mike Zadek, which you know very well what happened there in 2008. And I think that story is worth repeating if you can just give us the Cliff Notes version.
So anyway, Mike, in 2008, of course, the United States did not qualify the weight class, 60 kilos for Beijing, but USA Wrestling took Mike along to the Olympics, and I think probably about one of the first days of the Olympic Games, or one of the day before, day after the opening ceremony, somewhere in there, one of the guys, I want to say it was either the Hungarian or Romanian, who blew out his Achilles playing basketball, playing pickup basketball in Beijing, blew out his Achilles at 60 kilos nonetheless. So they send, that country sends their alternate, tries to get their alternate to Beijing. He's driving to the airport, goes off the road, wrecks his car on his way to the airport to go to Beijing, wrecks his car, I think had to go to the hospital. So he's unable to go. All of a sudden, Mike Zadek has a spot open for him to go to the Olympic Games. Oh. And it was unbelievable, the circumstances. I mean, the odds that two things that are that freakish are going to happen, that are going to open up a spot for you in the Olympic Games. But they did. So
you can't make this stuff up. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
To think that it's an impressive streak. Because Greco doesn't have the streak. Women's freestyle doesn't have the streak. But you go all the way back and we have the streak. There's never been a time that men's freestyle team has not been represented at the Olympic Games. And I hope it continues. But there's been some really close encounters with that. Whether it was Coleman Scott in 2012 winning the Olympic trials. And you have two guys going to try to qualify the weight in Sean Bunch and Reese Humphrey, I believe. Is that right? I think there was Molinaro.
Molinaro.
We had to
have some things happen for him too.
Yeah.
The last chance.
Jaden Cox had to go over.
Yeah.
So there's been times it's by no means an automatic. So I think more than anything, that's the important part is that we want to see how Jaden Cox does, but we also have to make sure that weight gets qualified. And Pat Downey, he didn't win a match, right? At the tournament. So it's conceivable that weight class does not get qualified after the world championships. I hope he does extremely well and gets a world title, but we have to be aware in any weight class.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it could be Burroughs.
Sure. I mean,
look
at 125 kilos last year. Taha Akul, 3-time world and Olympic champion on top of his game. You got to think, for the last 5 years, he's been number one or number two in the world for the most part at heavyweight, with the exception of last year. And he wound up getting knocked off. And then the guy that knocked him off runs into Petrushvili, reigning heavyweight world champ. All of a sudden, Akul's going home without a medal, which was almost inconceivable.
Really is, yeah. And we even look at Yazdani meeting with David Taylor in the first round. It's fortunately Taylor wins the whole thing, so he's able to get pulled back through, but that's a gauntlet to come back and just wait and see what your opponent does to see how you're going to be able to translate that into potential results. But man, it's not an easy thing. And just like with Burroughs, I mean, what if Burroughs and Chamizo wrestle in the first round? And
they won't.
Well, I know. No. I'm just making hypotheticals, but whoever it might be, you could have a situation where you have someone really good and then they get knocked off.
Well, yeah, the ranking series takes care of that a little bit, adds a little separation to that. Of course, like look at what happened last year with Taylor, as you just outlined, Taylor and Yazdani meeting up first round. But yeah, I mean, I think that's what's good about the ranking series is ideally we want to get the best guys on opposite sides of the bracket and give them an opportunity to meet up in the finals.
Love the ranking series. I think it's a great concept. It doesn't solve all the problems, but at least it provides some equity and allows people to participate in tournaments to up their standing at the world championships.
And I think that the idea behind it is just to get the top stars out and competing more. Because we don't get a chance to see them go head to head much. And look at how many times Burroughs now has been out and competed this year. And, you see top American stars putting it on the line and look at the top foreigners that we've seen a lot of.
It's fun. It's fun to see these guys compete. I love it.
You know, Chamizo went over there to the Asar duel with the idea of clinching that number one seed. He did it. Bounced out of the tournament after that.
Yeah, well, no incentive anymore.
But there's incentive for him to be the one seed. You got Sitikov and Burroughs on the opposite side, so there's, I think, people would probably say it's probably a little bit of a tier, you know, the top tier after those first three guys falls off a little bit, but now he only has to go through one of them.
Smart way to do it. I love what they're doing. It's just flat out a blast to watch these guys wrestle. And we get another opportunity with the Pan American Games and then off to the World Championships. Before we get to Rich Bender, anything else you want to add before we talk to USA Wrestling Executive Director Rich Bender? The floor is yours, Andrew.
I can't think of anything. You looking forward to Bulgaria, Kyle?
Absolutely. It's going to be so much fun. I love this age level World Championships. I just think these guys, again, they're just so good. They are just absolutely so good at this level that I don't know where you'd say along the line, but I would say that a lot of these guys are competing at a college level already, and they're in high school right now. And it's because they're competing against high level international talent in a lot of cases with the RTC system, which I'm sure we'll get into with Rich Bender, but they are good. They are good at this level, and I think they could, these high-end guys, I think they could beat a lot of college guys even at this age right now. Not all. I'm just saying I think they're college-ready in some cases to show the world what they can do.
I got to give you credit, Kyle, too. I mean, you've been a workhorse. That's countdown to Nur Sultan.
We're workhorses. We're not show ponies, so let's keep it in perspective.
I love the countdown. It's fun, man, to learn about these guys, too, just to dive deep into their stories and learn how they got to some place and win a world championship. And that's the one thing that I notice, especially in Greco, is that they stick with it, and then they kind of get in their late 20s, and it's just, boom, they get their world title. And maybe they didn't even get a medal before, and then they get there. And I think there's just a lot to that you just see that trend where maybe they get 28th one year, and then they win it the next year. That's just the kind of the way it works out, which kudos to Jordan Burroughs, man. When you have that track record, you have 7 out of 8 medals when you're in a world or Olympic team. That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That is insane how good that is, especially in the climate where you have to rely on someone to come back for you. It's just insane how good that is. So,
how about the fact that those 7 medals, he's ended every tournament with a victory?
It's even more impressive.
All been gold or bronze.
Yeah. Never lost in a world final.
Or a medal match.
Yeah. That's unreal. Like, Burroughs' legend continues to grow every time he wrestles. He just does something that wows us. And seems like Yanni's on pace to do something like that. No matter what happens here, if he makes a world team or not, he is the guy that is turning heads and everyone wants to watch right now.
What's been your favorite countdown piece that you've written so far? Who have you learned the most about? Who have you enjoyed learning the most about?
Probably a lot of the women's side, like the Petra Oli and Danielle Lappage. I think that it's just fun to see the rivalry and learn about the end of that match and how it was controversial, and Oli got her first world championship and she'd been with it a long time. And it's just fun to go back and just see both sides of that and how you report both sides of one person thinks the gold medal was theirs and it was controversial a little bit on the call at the end. And it's just fun to break that down. So it's, yeah. And then a lot of the Greco guys too, which I don't follow as closely as men's freestyle and women's freestyle. It's fun to learn about these Greco guys because they have great stories.
We're under 60 days now.
I love hearing that.
We are under 60 days until the World Championships.
Everyone needs to watch. Hey, we have all the age level, senior level, everything on track. So make sure whether you get the Gold Plus, which you can watch everything, or just sign up for it. Don't miss this. We're in the best era of American wrestling right now. You want to watch every second you can. So make sure you get those live streams. You want to get to Richard Bender?
Sure, let's do it.
Our guest today is the executive director of USA Wrestling. He's held this position since 2001. And more importantly, he has a birthday coming up. Birthday is August 9th, 1965. How do I know that? Because it's the exact same birthday as John Smith. It's Rich Bender. How are you?
I'm great. But, you know, I'll tell you, I look a lot younger than John Smith. I'll just say that on record.
You do. How do you do it?
Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, John's, I guess, been rode hard and put up wet a few times.
Well, I want to start with that, man, because John Smith is, he's still my hero. He's still the guy I look up to. You were the guy when it was events planning and management back in the day when John Smith was doing his thing. Was he a big star at the time? Did people appreciate the greatness of John Smith when it was happening?
Well, that's a great point. I don't think so. You know, I think, you know, we kind of took it for granted that, you know, we'd go into a world championship or an important senior level event, just assume John's going to win. And I don't think that there was an appreciation at the time that he was competing for, you know, just the technical level that he got himself to. And the fact that we were seeing in real time someone that was actually changing the sport. And then I think, you know, obviously as time passes, there's more and more appreciation and recognition for, you know, what he really accomplished. But at the time, I think it's fair to say that, you know, he didn't get the recognition that he probably deserved.
Did he want the recognition?
Well, I don't think so. You know, I think those of us that know John know that, you know, it's never been about himself. You know, obviously he's an incredibly driven athlete and coach and, you know, someone that, you know, was just in it to win it. And, you know, I think he, you know, he wasn't worried about, you know, what other people were thinking or, you know, promoting his brand or image. It was just about, you know, what he needed to do to beat the Russians.
How did he do it, by the way? I mean, what you saw it firsthand. What was his art? How did he accomplish six in a row, especially given that we haven't seen someone do more than three in a row?
Well, I think, you know, I heard John say this a few times where, you know, early on in his career, he became really obsessed with the sport and the technical aspects around, you know, what was necessary to win. And I think, you know, I heard him say that, you know, he'd go in the wrestling room and he felt like he was a mad scientist trying new things and just trying to innovate and, you know, look for ways to score that, you know, traditionally just people didn't attack it that way. And I think, you know, he was a bit of a scientist early on. And I think that's what led to his success is that, you know, he developed, you know, obviously the low single everybody knows about, but, you know, John developed techniques that, you know, was really cutting edge and so innovative that, you know, people just couldn't deal with them.
How do you balance that as being the executive director of USA Wrestling? Of course, you want to see Jordan Burroughs flourish. Your best friend is John Smith. Do you want to see him break John's record?
Oh, sure, sure. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, records are made to be broken. And I think, you know, Jordan Burroughs is, you know, on the precipice of doing some things that we haven't seen. And certainly, you know, obviously we're pulling for him. And I don't think there's a danger of the wrestling community forgetting about John Smith if Jordan Burroughs breaks his record.
Rich, can you articulate what Jordan Burroughs has meant to USA Wrestling?
Well, so Jordan Burroughs is obviously for a while been the face of Team USA in the American wrestling program. And I think, you know, Jordan Burroughs has set the standard of, you know, what you should be in terms of a champion and a person. And I think Jordan has taken to a new level, you know, in this environment of technology and social media of really being an elite athlete in all aspects, obviously on the mat, but also off the mat. And I think, you know, Jordan has set that standard. And I think hopefully it's a standard that will be embraced by the next generation of wrestlers that, you know, there's more to the sport than just wins and losses, but it's the commission of USA Wrestling is to help athletes achieve their full athletic and human potential. And I think Jordan has taken that human potential commitment to a little bit different level.
Let's go all the way back, historical perspective, even back to the AAU days in the 1800s. Was 2017 the most successful year in American wrestling history?
Well, you know, I think obviously winning the world championships, it's hard to say that 2018 was better because we didn't win the world in 2018. But, you know, and I think, you know, collectively, all thinking about all aspects of the organization and the sport, you know, it's right up there. I think, you know, we actually broke that medal record in 2018 and, you know, set a new membership record in 2018. But, you know, it's hard to say a year that, you know, we didn't win the world championship is the greatest year ever. But yeah, I think 2017 is right in there.
You have said that the moment that wrestling was proposed to be dropped from the Olympic Games was the seminal moment in wrestling's history, and then getting it back that whole time period. Do you still stand by that, that was the biggest moment in our sport?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it was, you know, and I'm proud of our sport. You know, we, and those dark days early on in February of 2013, when that was proposed for wrestling to come off the Olympic program, I think the sport was faced with a decision. Either we were going to fight and try to hold somebody accountable for making such a silly suggestion, or we were going to use it as an opportunity to make changes to our sport that we would normally not be able to make. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, the sport embraced the opportunity and looked at and approached it as a way for us to get changes made at the very highest level that was necessary for our sport to move forward. So yeah, I can for sure still stand by that statement. I think 2013 and the challenge to our Olympic status is one of the greatest things that ever happened to our sport.
Of course, there's women's freestyle wrestling, and then there's two men's counterparts. There's Greco-Roman and men's freestyle. How will we see that get balanced out in the coming years?
Well, certainly gender equity is something that's a priority for the International Olympic Committee. As of, you know, today, the IOC and UWW has approached it from the perspective of, it's not a specific, doesn't necessarily have to be a sport specific balance, but there's other sports that might balance, you know, inequities that exist in, like, for example, wrestling, where there's more opportunities for men than women, or, you know, balancing synchronized swimming to that. You know, I think the sport has a responsibility to certainly look at that and be prepared, because, you know, I think it's, you know, something that probably is going to be a reality as we move forward. And is that done by introducing women's Greco-Roman wrestling, or possibly a beach discipline that would have some more gender balance? But I think it's wise, and I think our International Federation, UWW, is looking for ways where that's, you know, I think most recently we see a lot of support for beach wrestling. And, yeah, I see. For me, I think, you know, we want to do everything in our power to continue to grow women's wrestling and provide opportunities for as many females as possible to participate in the sport of wrestling. But I think we also have to innovate and recognize that, you know, gender equity is something that's a priority for the International Olympic Committee, and something that we should embrace and figure out how we can support that.
Under your leadership, you have moved towards that women's wrestling movement, and the person of choice was Terry Steiner to be the U.S. national team coach for women. What did you see in Terry those early years?
Well, I think Terry Steiner, obviously a great champion, someone that understands the sport at a really high level, knows how to win. But, you know, what was attractive to me of hiring Terry was his approach and his demeanor and his ability to really work with people at a really unique level. Someone that was, you know, just had the right skill set and demeanor to help develop and grow a sport that was, you know, at the time, a little bit of a non-traditional part of wrestling.
Do you feel like people are getting on board with women's wrestling? Do you feel the narrative changing?
I do, and I think, you know, certainly we still... you know, there's still people out there that aren't supportive of that discipline, but I think that's becoming few and far between. And I think, you know, and I've said this publicly a couple times, I think, you know, the female participation in the sport of wrestling will be the next great thing that happens to our sport and helps us innovate and shove wrestling forward.
USA Wrestling, I think, was the first Olympic sporter in the United States to move towards safe sport. Why was that important to be on the cutting edge of that movement?
Well, certainly, I mean, as we develop women's wrestling and recognize that, you know, it's been a male dominated sport for a long time, and for us to really put women's wrestling in a position to where we can give it a chance to be, to reach its full potential. You know, we've got to educate people and ensure that, I mean, wrestling is a physical sport. And I think, you know, we have unique challenges in our sport, but recognize that, you know, there's a physicality of it, and there's going to be male coaches that are going to coach female athletes. And I think, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, that athlete safety is not something that's holding us back. And, you know, we committed to it early on. I mean, obviously it's the right thing to do. But, you know, we thought as we start to develop the female part of our sport and recognizing that, you know, until, you know, we have developed enough coaches and female coaches that can coach, that there's going to be challenges that exist. And we want to educate people and make sure that those coaches and athletes are successful. And that's part of the reason that we made such a big commitment to safe sport early on. And also recognizing that, you know, sexual abuse and investigating and adjudicating challenges wasn't a core competency of USA Wrestling, right? We didn't have that competency within our organization. So we're big advocates for the development of the Center for Safe Sport to really aggregate resources and experts that can help us educate, empower, and make wrestling the safest sport on the planet.
Winning gold medals is always what you're striving toward. Is that what defines success at USA Wrestling?
It does not. And I think, you know, our mission is pretty clear. You know, we're about helping athletes achieve their full athletic and human potential. Obviously winning at the very highest level is part of what we do, and certainly dominates a lot of our attention and resources. But, you know, at the end of the day, success is really measured by the individuals that are developed through our sport.
There are three disciplines. You have men's freestyle, women's freestyle, Greco that we went through. How do you balance all of that and keep in touch with all those three disciplines?
Well, all three disciplines have unique challenges, right? I mean, we're incredibly blessed in our country that obviously the transition from the folk style or the collegiate system is easy for athletes to train. Not easy, but right, that there's a not as steep of a learning curve for, you know, someone that participates in the traditional school college community to be successful in freestyle wrestling. And obviously, as we develop women's wrestling, there are unique challenges and support is needed to help young girls achieve at the highest level. And, you know, Greco-Roman has its own set of challenges. So, you know, not to avoid your question, but, you know, it's different. They're all different. They all need different types of different levels of support. And, you know, the best word I could use is just different. They're different.
Regional training centers are really advancing the sport. It's what everyone talks about. It's credited with why we're having the success we are. Take us through that development and how we got to this point where RTCs are really a crucial part of the United States wrestling narrative.
So many years ago, and I think a lot of us that were around at a time where NCAA rules really made it difficult for aspiring Olympic athletes that weren't enrolled in school anymore or in college, it was really difficult for them to find places to train. And the rule was, if you were not an alumni of the school, you weren't a paid coach on their coaching staff or enrolled in that university, you couldn't train with the college athletes. And we went to the NCAA and said, look, we have an asset in aspiring Olympic athletes that we think can help student athletes, current student athletes, get better and provide a resource for them. So we were able to get the NC2A to reimagine, you know, that interaction. And once that rule was relaxed, and was the, that was the foundation for the development of the regional training center program, where in regional training center practices, there could be that interaction. And where we've really taken it to a different level is the prospective student athletes also now have access and opportunity to the best wrestlers and coaches on the planet. And I think that's where, you know, one of the reasons I think, and one of them, not the only one, where, you know, we're seeing younger and younger athletes achieve at the highest level. Well, that's the NCAA championship where we have two true freshmen win, or, you know, athletes winning World Olympic medals at a younger age. It's been a, you know, a system that's really been beneficial there, but, you know, it doesn't come without challenges. I think there's, you know, certainly pressure come or in on individual programs to develop resources and, you know, there's a bit of an arms race. And, you know, I think that's a responsibility that USA Wrestling has to help manage that, so that, you know, there isn't unintended consequences of having this opportunity to where, you know, maybe certain colleges lose hope and give up and drop programs. That's certainly not what our intent is. I think, you know, it's been, from a competitive standpoint, certainly a big factor in the success of Team USA. But don't forget, I mean, we're all on the same team when it comes to Team USA. It's about winning at the highest level for our country. And, you know, certainly we're grateful and recognize the commitment that college coaches and college programs make every day to the Olympic effort. And certainly, you know, we are cognizant of the role they play and are certainly grateful for that. And, you know, we've created an economy around a sport that never existed before. I think 30 years ago when I started at USA Wrestling, you know, the one thing that we always talked about was, boy, if there was one thing that you could change, what it would be. And well, we professionalized the sport of wrestling, where actually athletes could make a livable wage to train. And if that was the case, then success would come. Well, we're there, right? I mean, there's athletes now that are through regional training centers and the investment that donors and supporters of traditional college wrestling has made to keep those elite athletes on campus and around their student athletes, that have created an economy where we're there, right? Athletes are now earning a livable wage to and become professional wrestlers. And I think that's good for our sport, and, you know, certainly doesn't come without challenge and pressure and responsibilities that a lot of people are now shouldering that they didn't before. So that's certainly the straw that mixes the drink for success at the very highest level is our regional training center program.
Rich, this is certainly a super hot topic in the sport right now. I hear people that want to see some RTC reform. I hear some people that would like to probably see them go away in their entirety. And then obviously there are a lot of people that are passionately for regional training centers and the benefits that they have provided. What would happen if they went away?
So if they went away, you know, obviously USA Wrestling would have a responsibility to look for ways to develop the next generation of wrestlers. So, you know, we would, I mean, obviously if regional training centers went away, it would probably, you know, the sport would go back to the outside sports club model where, you know, Dan Gable made it pretty famous in at the University of Iowa, where, you know, there's going to be different opportunities for elite athletes to support college programs and secure resources to do that. And I think the USA Wrestling would probably be forced to partner with, you know, some of those outside sports clubs that wanted to make a commitment to the next generation of athletes. And we would go away from a model that provides everybody with the same opportunity to develop a regional training center to, you know, the outside sports club model where, you know, we're focused on those sports clubs that have the resources and have made the commitment to international wrestling. And, you know, I think you'd see an aggregation of the elite athletes into those centers, which I don't think would be good for our sport, but, you know, that's probably the reality of what would happen.
Why do people want to see them reined in?
Well, I think that, you know, there's concern that, you know, there's interpretation of NCAA rules that compliance professionals have different opinions of what can and can't be done, and that's creating a little bit of a discrepancy in terms of the benefit that a regional training center has across the college landscape. So, you know, I think what we're hearing from those that would like to see reform and change is more rules. I don't know that we necessarily are big fans of more rules. I think, you know, certainly, you know, it's a legendary. Everyone knows Cale Sanderson has secured a different level of resource around his regional training than some others. And I think, you know, there's people that would like to see that minimized. And, you know, I think when we talk about reform, it's, you know, most people would like to see more rules and enforcement around those rules to ensure that, you know, people aren't using the regional training center as a way to circumvent NCAA rules, which is certainly not the intent. No way is where the regional training centers established to help circumvent NCAA rules.
Speaking of policy and how we got to a certain point, let's talk about the Olympic trials. It's always interesting when you go from 10 and shrink down to 6. You guys came up with a formula that's really cutting edge in that if you medal at a non-Olympic weight class, you're automatically in the semifinals. How did you come up with that?
Well, you know, obviously we were strong proponents, and our goal is, I mean, we'd like to see 10 weight classes in the Olympic Games. I mean, that's, I think, a fair representation of our sport. And I think, you know, those of us in the sport recognize that 6 is not adequate, but we also recognize that we don't get to make those rules, right? We work with an International Olympic Committee that has parameters that they force the international sport federations to live within. And we put in my conversation I had a long time ago with the current president of the International Federation was why would we limit the development of the sport of wrestling based on what the International Olympic Committee says to us in a requirement that we have for one event every 4 years, right? We know that when someone wins the world championship in a world weight, that country celebrates the sport at the same level as someone that wins a gold medal at an Olympic weight. Now, obviously, in Olympic year, we know that one event there's limited opportunity. But we also know that we were required that we had a bit of a responsibility to encourage those athletes that want to participate in the world weight, or if it's the right weight for them, that it wasn't an either or proposition. Either you're going to go to an Olympic weight the year before the Olympic Games or not, and have a chance to be successful. So, you know, just look at our team right now, 74 kilos. Arguably we have the best athlete in the world, right? 79 kilos, arguably the best wrestler in the world, we'll find that out in August, who that is specifically. But you know, 86. You have Jordan Burroughs, you have Kyle Day, you have David Taylor, you have Jaden Cox, you have Kyle Snyder. Right, there's all those guys aren't going to be on the Olympic team. And when we started to digest and look for ways to ensure that, you know, we had maximum impact and success at the world championships the year before the Olympics, we wanted to make sure that someone won a world medal or won the world championships at a world weight the year before the Olympics, that there was recognition of that and encouragement for an athlete that thought that that's what they wanted to do to do it. So we didn't want to just mail it in the year before the Olympics when it comes to success at the world championships. And we think this is the way to do that.
The Olympic trials is probably the best wrestling event that anyone can attend. And I would even include the world championships at some level. It's just unbelievable because once you add that Olympic name to it, people come out of the woodworks. Where can we buy tickets to that? What's the venue going to be? Do we have any insight onto that yet?
So we are in the final stages, and I think I've said this before, final stages of our contract negotiations with Penn State. Yeah, first week in April of next year. And, you know, I said this a lot publicly that, you know, I don't like the event. And the reason I don't like the event is because the finality that it brings to a lot of people's careers. And, you know, I mean, I love the wrestling, but it's just right that there is going to be, you know, in the three disciplines, six athletes are going to leave state college with, you know, a step towards accomplishing their ultimate goals. And there's going to be a lot of athletes that's the finality of their wrestling career. Obviously, you know, I think one of the great things about the sport of wrestling is that the Olympic Games is the pinnacle of our sport, right? It is the pinnacle. And, you know, when someone commits to, you know, winning a medal for our country, I think it's the purest pursuit in all sport. And there's a finality around our Olympic trials that is it for a lot of wrestlers. And right, that's tough for me and you know, obviously really tough for wrestlers at times to recognize that in. But yeah, it's going to be at State College in April of next year. And, you know, we think it's going to be a sold out can't miss event.
Do you have any stories about that? Like, for example, I remember a few years ago or 4 years ago when they had a last chance qualifier at the Unidome, there was a 50-year-old guy that entered, and I think he just wanted to be able to say, I tried out for the Olympics. Do you have any stories like that where it's just borderline crazy what people will do to get on an Olympic team?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously our sport's a little bit different now, and qualification procedures and requirements make it a little different for you know, a 50-year-old athlete that has little chance of making our team participating in the final trials. But and we talk about this a lot within the U.S. Olympic movement, and that is, you know, the commitment and the sacrifice that wrestlers make to make an Olympic team is not necessarily normal. Most people would look at it and say, why would you do that for that? And they're not motivated by fame or fortune or that, you know, they're just motivated by the innate desire to be the best. So there's all kinds of examples of wrestlers making almost supernatural, commitments to, you know, pushing themselves to a level to try to make an Olympic team that is, you know, inspiring. And I think, you know, I don't have an example that comes to mind of a lot of 50-year-olds that have made a commitment trying to make an Olympic team. Yeah. But yeah, it's a purest pursuit in all sports for sure.
Yeah. And I guess I was thinking more about someone that might just try to say they made the 1980 Olympic team and the people won't know because it was boycotted. I know Wayne Bachman has a few of those stories where people just get crazy trying to have that Olympic tag next to their name and lie about it. So wasn't sure if
you had sure that. For sure the most. And I remember Myron Roderick used to say all the time, the older I was, the older I get, the better I was. And probably the most overused statement that I hear people make is that I was an Olympic alternate to an Olympic team. And, right. We all know that that's the beauty of the U.S. Wrestling model is that anybody has an opportunity to make the Olympic team, anybody, right? There's a process that, you know, you can go through that. You can enter and make a run at an Olympic team. And so, I mean, it's, if you buy a membership and enter the U.S. Open, you know, I guess technically you could say that you know, you were in the process to make an Olympic team. So I would guess that, you know, most of those people are somewhat telling the truth, but when it comes to Olympic alternate, that's, I think probably one of the more overstated comments that we hear.
What's your take on this Yanni Zane situation?
Well, I mean, I think the good news for the U.S. wrestling program is, I mean, I don't know that it's a stretch to think that might be the two best guys in the world at that weight. And, you know, obviously, you know, we pray every time we have a world and Olympic team trials that it's a clean process, that there's no question. And you know, there are times when right? There's that happens in our sport where it isn't as clean as we would like it to be. But there, you know, the beauty of the U.S. system is there's a process, right? There's a process if an athlete feels like, you know, they were denied the right to be heard. And that's the process we're in right now. And, you know, that will be decided, you know, through that process, whether, you know, an athlete was denied that right, and we'll respect the decision, whatever it is.
Rich, can you give us an update on maybe some timelines of how quickly this might move along, where we're at in the process?
Well, it's, you know, I mean, the reality of it is the final entries have already been submitted for the Pan American Games. And, you know, so, I mean, Zane Rufford is going to Lima, Peru to represent the United States in the Pan American Games. And, you know, Yanni does have the rights to use a process to you know, have an independent group at least hear his thoughts on why he may have believed that he was denied that opportunity. And I think, you know, towards the end of this month, we're going to have a lot more clarity on where we are in the process and, you know, what the next step will be.
You said something interesting. You said you just pray that these things don't happen, but man, they do. Do you almost kind of just think something's going to happen, whether it's a Matt Lindland, Soraki situation, or going way back to Randy Lewis and Leroy Smith, something's probably going to happen. Do you just cringe when it does happen?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously that's, you know, in the pure and perfect world, you know, we have, you know, per discipline in a normal world team trials, our final X, 10 decisive winners without any controversy. But you know, that's, it's part of our sport. And, you know, sometimes my daughter participated in college equestrian through her career in college. And, you know, it makes me appreciate, the lack of subjectivity that exists in wrestling. And, you know, there still is that element that exists, but, you know, obviously not to the same level of you know, a judge sport like college equestrian, that you know, there's still subjectivity, and, you know, the ability for people to have a different view of a call or a specific situation. So, you know, I think what is encouraging to me is that, you know, there's a process that exists for people to take an independent look and determine, you know, what if anything can should or might change. So, no, it's not personal for me or USA Wrestling. Obviously, you know, we will vigorously defend a system that we collectively have established to select our team, and respect the fact that as part of the Ted Stevens Amateur Sports Act, there's an Article 9 process by which an athlete can be heard. Doesn't mean that they'll necessarily they'll be the result that they would like, but the Ted Stevens Amateur Sports Act requires that every athlete is given a fair opportunity to represent the United States in a protected competition. And they feel that that's not been the case, that there's a process that we go through to ensure that that's the case.
As we mentioned early in the show, 18 years as executive director. Have you ever had that moment where something good has happened or there's something positive in the sport and you just think to yourself, if they only knew how much work and how much behind the scenes work it took to get to this point?
Well, I've been blessed. And, you know, I started at USA Wrestling in July of 1988 and, you know, been blessed to, you know, there hasn't been a day go by that I haven't, you know, thought about pinching myself to recognize, you know, the blessing it's been to be involved in this sport. But when, you know, we have success and you see athletes that you mentioned it last year when we won the world championships, I recall, I mean, I remember, I think about it a lot, is that when Kyle won that match to obviously for him to win the world championships and for us to achieve something that we haven't achieved very many times, I sat down and started crying. And I'm not embarrassed to say that, but I remember just sitting in my seat and literally just you know, being just overcome with emotion. And I realized that someone was, had their arm around me, was patting me. And I look up, and this shirt, the guy that was had his arm around me is all wet from me, you know, sobbing. I look up, and it's Nanette Lavic. And, you know, I thought to myself, what a, you know, what a wimp, man, here I am. But, you know, that was a situation, I think, that, you know, it was, and it wasn't that I was happy for myself personally, but I'm really happy for the collective group. You know, I was happy, obviously, most for the athletes that achieve, a lot of them, their lifelong dream of being a world champion and ultimately being part of a team that achieved at the very highest level. But also, you know, just the stamp of legitimacy on what so many people have invested in, that, you know, the American wrestling system is a good system. It is productive at the very highest level. And I think that that's just one example. Obviously, when we achieve things as a sport, in collegiate wrestling or even from a membership perspective or just a participation perspective, I think that's, you know, those are all examples of, you know, the collective work of a lot of people, that are committed to the greater good and ultimately shoving our sport forward.
But Rich, man, going back to that 2017, there can never conceivably be another moment like that where the two best wrestlers in the world, one from the United States, one from Russia, meet in the finals. There's one point on the line. The deciding point gives the team championship to the United States or Russia. It's Sadulayev Snyder. Snyder gets the win 6-5. It just can't be topped.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a movie, right? And here in the back of my neck, standing up right now when you articulate that. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that was, I think, the ultimate stamp of legitimacy on the American wrestling system. And I don't mean the USA wrestling system. I mean the American wrestling system, that, you know, we were the best team in the world that year, the absolute number one team on the planet. And I think that's just, you know, the thanks to, you know, people like Andy Barth and Art Martori that believed in that program, you know, long before we were having that kind of success, and the regional training centers and the thousands of volunteers that, you know, worked every day to help, you know, shove American wrestling forward. I think it was a great testament to those people, and, you know, obviously incredibly blessed to just be a part of it.
United World Wrestling has really taken the sport to another level. Of course, it used to be FILA, but just going to my first World Championships overseas, the product was just truly incredible with the pageantry, and it just seemed like it's a cleaner system than it's ever been. What have they done to get us to that point?
Well, I think, you know, new leadership, and Ned Lalovic, you know, understood early that, you know, for wrestling to be successful, we had to embrace technology and really assume a responsibility about creating a product that could be successful, and that, you know, eliminated as much subjectivity as possible to ensure that, you know, the athletes that deserve to win won. And, you know, I think there's been a level of transparency and accountability that UWW has implemented or instilled in our sport that has been the foundation by which, you know, we have been successful. I think there's certainly room to grow. I mean, I think our world championship, although it's really successful, can be much more successful. I think, you know, it's really difficult for us to, you know, promote an 8-day wrestling tournament. And, you know, I think we've got to reimagine some things and aggressively try to think for ways to make our sport more and more attractive. You know, I think it's also been really integral to our success that, you know, we've had leadership at the international level that has made a commitment to consistency and not, you know, making little tweaks. I think that's one of the things that got our sport in trouble was, you know, the most recent idea was the best idea. We were changing rules at the very highest level at a pace that just wasn't healthy. And, you know, we can talk all we want about the ball pull, but in believe it or not, at some point somebody thought that was a good idea. And I think, you know, we've got leadership within the International Federation now that really embraces technology, understands the opportunity that our sport has, and is, you know, look for ways to make it more and more attractive. And it certainly doesn't hurt that you have a guy like Ned Lalovic that has really, I mean, if you think in 2013, wrestling had no representation at all at the IOC level, none. We had no IOC members, no, you know, the president of the International Federation had no role within the IOC. So now we have arguably one of the most influential members of the International Olympic Movement. And Ned Lalovic is, you know, member of the executive board of the IOC. He's, I mean, and most recently been given the responsibility to try to figure out challenges that are existing in other sports like boxing. And I think that's really been helpful. And it's put wrestling in a really enviable position by, you know, from a lot of sports that, you know, we are given opportunities that maybe some other sports don't have because of that kind of progressive thought and positioning.
Rich, Kyle and I have talked about this previous times on the show. We're in a heyday for American wrestling, and the 2017 World Team Trials were phenomenal. Some of the matches at Final X the last couple years have been phenomenal, but there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect between the American wrestling community fully getting behind the Olympic disciplines. I mean, we see 20,000 people in the stands with regularity at the NCAA championships, and maybe, you know, that might be 3, 4, 5 times as many as we'll see at the World Team Trials Final X. How do we change that? How does the freestyle Olympic styles, how do they become as popular as NCAA wrestling?
Yeah. And so, I mean, we talk a lot about that, by the way, and it's, you know, how do we transition those collegiate fans into the international discipline? Well, you know, part of it is recognition for the fact that, you know, that we don't have the ability to draw an affinity to a certain segment of the wrestling population because we're Oklahoma State or Penn State or Cornell, right? We're, mm-hmm. Those people have those affinities for those schools. And I think, you know, if you look at you know, the demographics around those fans that are attending the NCAA consistently, most of them have an affinity to a specific school. And, you know, it's been a challenge for us to really, without having athletes from those schools on our team to draw that affinity into US or to the international discipline. But, you know, our goal is pretty similar. I mean, it's not similar. Our goal is to do everything in our power to encourage those people to all come together on one team once a year and support, you know, the American U.S. wrestling program. But it doesn't go without, and I mean, we recognize it. I mean, the foundation of our sport is the school college community. And whether that's an affinity that someone has to one of the 10,000 high school programs or, you know, under 80 Division I college programs, you know, I think as success comes to Team USA and, you know, those college stars progress and find success at the highest level, it gives us more and more opportunity to appeal to those traditional wrestling fans. But, you know, I think, you know, the closer the rules get to one another, I think that also helps. And, you know, I think as we make a commitment to ensure that spectators have a great experience when they come to those events, then, you know, we have a chance to get them back the next year. And obviously, you know, as we start to build a fan base around the international discipline, I don't think it's an either or proposition. I mean, I think it's, you know, there is certainly the ability to appeal to every single college wrestling fan that supports college wrestling or the NCAA Division I championships to come to the Olympic trials. And I think guys like Jordan Burroughs and David Taylor and Kyle Dake that have, you know, had success at the collegiate level and those traditional, really popular collegiate program or collegiate competitions, you know, brings credibility to what we're doing and hopefully helps us bring some of those fans over.
As we think about where we are right now in the American wrestling landscape and just influencers, Stan Dezett comes to mind. He's a vice president for UWW. How influential is he and what has he done to move the needle for United States wrestling?
Well, I think, you know, Stan deserves credit for moving the international sport forward worldwide. And, you know, Stan was, I mean, Nenad Lalovic is not a wrestling expert, right? He has very little, if any, true experience in the sport. And, you know, this is a little known reality that in that day in 2013, when the International Federation decided to change leadership, Stan was the first person whose name came forward as that leader. And Stan, and a lot of people don't know this, Stan took the approach on that day that for us to be successful as a sport, we can't have an American leading that program. It needs to be a European that, you know, can be available and around the IOC to, you know, take our sport and develop relationships and promote the sport of wrestling in a really unselfish act. And that's when Stan suggested Nenad Lalovic. And, you know, he was put forward and obviously it was a fabulous decision and one that, you know, still paying dividends today. But I think it's fair to say that Stan has established himself within the International Wrestling Bureau or and UWW as the technical expert on the Bureau, someone that obviously is a great champion himself, but also a student of the sport of wrestling. So when it comes to really making technical decisions about wrestling, Stan has established himself as the foremost authority within that group.
Let's end with this. This is Kyle talking. I want to make sure nobody thinks this is Andy Hamilton asking this question. If it came down to it and I wrestled Jason Bryant, who would win that match?
Well, you know, I don't know if I can go on record as taking a position here because I don't think that you guys are in the same weight class. So,
yeah, I know.
You know, I think if, you know, I could answer that if, you know, if we could all agree that you're in the same weight class, because obviously both you guys are, you know, wickedly skilled and talented athletic individuals. And I'm sure it would be a barn burner one way or the other.
Yeah, it sure would be. What are you and John going to do to celebrate your 54th birthday? Do you guys get together and hang out?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if we have plans this year. In fact, I know we don't. I'll be in Lima, Peru, attending the Pan American games. But no, I don't think we have any plans. We're at odds over a couple things right now. We I think probably act a little bit more like brothers than just friends, but no plans to get together this year. But you know, like there's nothing I enjoy more than being on a pond in Stillwater, Oklahoma, fishing for largemouth bass on my birthday, and that's something that we've tried to do the last few years, but not going to be able to do that this year.
Speaking of what, did you watch his Matt versus Bad event where he wrestled the softball coach?
Yeah, I did. I did, and I you know, I advised him early on that he was talking a lot of smack prior to that match, and I said, you know, that guy is a lot bigger than you are, and you know, he proved me wrong. Nothing to worry about, and you know, handled business as he always did as a competitor. But you know, that guy was a lot bigger than he was, but you know, he got the job done.
That's what I'm saying. When I wrestle Jason, that's what's going to happen. I'm going to get the job done, Rich.
Well, you know, we're looking to you know, we have this wrestle off with Alex Derringer and Kyle Bake, and you know, that would probably be a nice little addition to that program. If we could have you guys go 2 out of 3, maybe.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's see what happens. Hey, appreciate this time. Thanks for your insight, and we're really looking forward to this Olympic cycle. You're right, though. There's a lot of pain that goes into the Olympic trials, but it really is an event like no other, and people need to see that wrestling event. It's a marquee event, and we appreciate your time.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'd be remiss if I didn't say it. And you mentioned it earlier about being the heyday for wrestling in America. And that's, you know, not only due to the fact that, you know, we have, you know, monumental interest levels in our sport at both the high school, collegiate, international level, but also the access that the wrestling community has to the inner workings of our sport. And that's as a direct result of what you guys are doing and the commitment that you've made to really illuminate wrestling. And, you know, I'd be really remiss if I didn't recognize that, you know, we're in this point of our history of our sport as a result of the efforts that you guys are making to provide access. Our sport is consumed at a different level than ever before in the history of wrestling. And then we're really fortunate to be, you know, having some success to go along with that. But that's you guys deserve a lot of credit for that.
Well, it's a time like no other, and I know we're honored to be a part of it and can't say, wait to see what's next. So thank you for taking this time, and probably the next time we see you, we'll be overseas somewhere. So we'll look forward to seeing you, and probably in Kazakhstan.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you, and you have a blessed day.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
Another interesting interview where we get insight from Executive Director Rich Bender, a variety of topics that we can dive into there. We could go into the Yanni Zane situation, and I think he's right. He's got to just play it down the line. There's processes in place. Of course, he can't take a side in any situation. You have to let the processes play out, but it sounds like there's still a window of hope for Yanni to make that team, although you get the feeling that it's slight at this point.
I think it just all comes down to interpretation of the rule book.
It's just interesting because I think it's always hard to overturn, and you just don't know what the person in charge or making the decision is going to think about that situation. So yeah, that's just, it's one of those that you wait and see, but clearly we know that Zane will be going to the Pan American Games and 6 weight classes for that. And that is an Olympic weight class at 65 kilos.
Health permitting, I would assume. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. If everything's okay at this point. So, and I just think the more you look at the Olympic movement, and Rich said, hey, the Olympic trials are painful, and there is a lot of pain in that. And that you melt down to 18 weight classes, 6 for each of the disciplines. Someone's not making the team, man. It's tough. I mean, Kyle Dake might not be an Olympian this upcoming year. If he goes down.
There are at least 2 world champions that are not going to make the team.
Yeah. And that's rough. And that's a tough pill to swallow, because you do have this deep team, especially in those upper weights where we're talking about, because look at what you have. You have Burroughs, Olympic and world champion. You have Dake, world champion. You have Taylor, world champion. You have Cox, world champion. You have Snyder, world champion. And you have Gwiz, bronze medalist, two-time bronze medalist. And then Gable Steveson is an age group world champion. So just up and down the lineup, and that's not going to matter as much for super heavyweight, because that's going to be set in stone there. I don't foresee Kyle Snyder moving up a weight class, but.
Or Gwiz moving down.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either. or Gable moving down a weight class, but it's not fun to see that someone's going to leave with a lot of heartache. And same for the women, same for the Greco. I think we know the men's freestyle team a little bit more intimately, and they've had the success in the last couple of years. But boy, it's going to be a challenge. And it does sound like that State College will be hosting the Olympic trials this year. So it will be fun to see how that plays out.
You can look at it a couple different ways. You can look at it like the downside while the United States is leaving all these guys home, or you can look at it the other way. Condense it down to 6. It's going to be fireworks. Serious, serious fireworks at 6 weight classes. It's going to be a wrestling event unlike any other that we've seen in the United States, just with the level of depth in the system right now, all the established stars who have been around for a while, all the young ones who are on the rise. There'll be some guys that'll be popping up there in 2020 making a run at it. Do we see, does a guy like Makai Lewis factor into the things at 74 kilos, junior world champion? Where does Zahid fit into the mix? Aaron Brooks, how soon is he a factor on the senior level? That's going to add a whole nother layer to it. I remember 2016, remember Mark Hall having the opportunity to see him compete as a high school senior in the Olympic trials. That was pretty cool, seeing him win some matches and be, I think him and Massa put on a show a couple times. Those were a lot of fun to watch. So it's going to be a lot of fun watching that tournament unfold. It's going to create a lot of intrigue.
Tell you, having the tag of Olympian means more and more all the time, especially in wrestling, to be able to say Olympian. Dan Dennis, hey, it didn't work out as well as he wanted to, lost in the first round. It didn't matter, man. He's still an Olympian, still has that label next to his name.
Might still have those fancy white pants.
He is wearing those blazer. Right now. Yeah, he's wearing the blazer out in the woods right now in his vehicle. But It was fun to dive in with Rich Bender. We appreciated the time. As always, for Andrew Hamilton, I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling. You have been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.